Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So Rob Manfred's nightmare. Rob Manfred's dream season continued yesterday, and the dream added a brand new component. I'm not talking about the fact that the Miami Marlins had their season paused. I'll get to that in a second. Because there is a new element to his dream. It took place in Houston last night between the Dodgers and the Astros. Now, anytime the Astros are mentioned right about now, you know the commissioner starts to flashback and trip and spin. Because that was the old disaster. Even that commissioner has to acknowledge that that was a disaster. You know, the disaster before the last two disasters. That was when a World Series winning team got busted for cheating. And the fallout was, the fallout was weird, right? Then the question started right about that time. Is this guy a good commissioner or not? Is this the right guy for that gig or not? Hell, never mind the right guy for the gig. Does this guy even know what the hell he's doing? With everything going on then, with the restart this year, and the rest of the world at large, maybe you had forgotten about the Houston Astros. The LA Dodgers sure as hell have not forgotten about the Astros, nor should they. So, LA gets out to a 5-2 lead last night. Then in the bottom of the sixth, things start to get really nice. Alex Bregman was at the plate for the Astros. My guy Joe Kelly was on the mound for the Dodgers. Kelly was having a hard time finding the plate. He falls behind 3-0, and then this happened.
Long set, 3-0. And that's over Bregman's head and goes to the backstop. A 96-mile-an-hour fastball that was closer to the letters on the back of Bregman's jersey than it was to home plate.
I'll tell you, I see some baseball, and that looked intentional to me.
Me too.
A lot of times you can just tell by where a pitcher's eyes are going.
Well, it was 3-0. Figured, well, put him on anyway. Alrighty.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. That'll get some attention.
Astros radio on the call. So Bregman, and as you know, I'm a big Bregman guy too. He seemed stunned. And although this guy generally is fearless, he seemed a little bit scared. But then again, I would be too. Somebody just threw a rock 96 miles per hour and it buzzed the tower. I mean, that's some scary-ish. Now, I know what you're thinking. Joe Kelly was looking to send a message to the Astros for ripping a World Series from the Dodgers when they cheated to beat them. Except for one thing. Joe Kelly was with the Red Sox when that happened. Joe Kelly was still with the Red Sox a year later when they got busted for cheating. But the question remains, was that something? Was that a message from Kelly to Bregman? Did it just get away, or did he actually put that pitch exactly where he wanted it, right near Bregman's dome? Hell if I know. But let me ask you this. Did you see the previous three pitches? They were all over the place. Also, historically, my guy Kelly, he's had control issues at times. This is not a secret. That's not news. Look at his career stats. But then again, don't take it from me. Don't take it from me. Take it from Joe Kelly's house. Remember this from the shutdown.
Oh. Did you just break the window?
Yeah.
All right. Wondering how quarantine's going? Joe is working on a changeup. Yeah.
All right, so you didn't see that, but you heard that. Or maybe you remember seeing that. What that was a major league pitcher in the shutdown, pitching in his house or in his yard, missing a net completely and shattering a window in his own home. And you're going to come up in here and tell me that this guy does not have control issues, that this guy isn't wild. I mean, come on. Was he trying to send his house a message? Why? Did the window somehow show him up? Like, nice swing, house, you bitch. Grab some pine. Stop cheating, house. Yeah, I doubt that. But then again, back to last night. Watching Kelly after the pitch to Bregman, he didn't look like and wasn't acting like he was looking to start something. He wasn't all amped up and coming out of his shoes and inviting Bregman out to the mound. I mean, to the contrary, he appeared to yawn and signal to his fielders that that's one out. So then Kelly gets Michael Brantley to ground into a fielder's choice. And then after the play was over, listen to what you hear. You hear this.
Let's get on the mound, little
Ooh, okay.
All right, so if I'm hearing that correctly, and Alvin will run that back in a minute. If I'm hearing that correctly, that sounds like somebody from the Astros side yelling, quote, just get on the mound, little bleeper.
Let's get on the mound, little
No, that doesn't sound like that is. That's an Astro or somebody on that side saying, just get on the mound, little bleeper.
Let's get on the mound, little
All right, so that's one of the good things about playing games without fans. You can hear everybody and everything. I don't know who said that. I don't know if Kelly heard it, but the inning was about to go up another notch. Things were about to get even nicer. So Kelly walks the next batter on four straight. Then Carlos Correa comes to the plate with two on and two out in a three-run game. Kelly starts him off with a breaking ball. It goes right at Correa's head. It sends him into the dirt. Correa gets up, takes off his helmet, and he stares at Kelly. Again, was that intentional? I've got no idea. He had walked the previous batter on four pitches. He once missed a net completely and broke a window. Control is an issue for this guy. It was last night. It is most nights. I know it was that night that he dotted that window. But ask yourself this. Why would you throw a breaking ball at somebody's head with two runners on base in a three-run game in a shortened season when every game counts? Every inning, every batter, every pitch counts. Everything matters, especially since that pitch got away from the catcher and both runners advanced. I mean, I'll ask you this. Do you think it's more important for Joe Kelly to send a message than it is to win an actual game in a shortened season? Do you think his teammates and his manager are going to think, dude, nice job sending that message. That's the main thing here. Not winning the game. We don't give a damn about that. We're all about the code. We're all about policing the game. I mean, come on. Get out of here with that. So Kelly falls behind 2-0. Then he comes back with a swinging strike and a couple of foul balls, setting up this 2-2 pitch.
Another 2-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on the curveball downstairs. And Kelly gets his man. Astros dugout has something to say to Kelly as he walks back to the Dodger dugout. Kelly turning his head to return fire as Correa also has something to say to Joe Kelly, and now both dugouts empty as the umpires are trying to keep everyone socially distant.
Yeah, Kelly was staring back at Correa as he walked off the field, and Reddick in the on-deck circle got loud. Now Correa kind of front and center right now.
Both bullpens jogging in as, for the most part, the Dodgers players are on one side, the Astros players are on the other side, and
it's
the umpires
for a fight,
are in
right?
the middle trying to prevent any shenanigans.
It's a good night for a fight. So what happened there? A couple of awesome things. First off, you see Kelly walking off the mound making faces at Correa. First, it was a crazy face and partially sticking out his tongue. Then he went with a pouting face, which is it's utterly hilarious to me. Grown men making faces at one another will never not be funny to me. A guy striking out another guy and then sticking out his tongue or doing a pouty face is like the funniest thing ever. It's awesome. Except according to Astros manager Dusty Baker, what really set things off was not the faces. It's what Kelly said to Correa before he started walking away.
You know, what really enraged everybody is when, you know, he told Carlos, I mean, he struck him out. And he told him, nice swing, bitch, and see, what are you supposed to do then?
I don't know, laugh? It's funny. I mean, if that's really what went down, if that's really what Kelly said, if that's how that went down, that makes it so much funnier. The guy is wild all inning. He strikes out the last batter and tells him, nice swing, bitch.
Nice swing, bitch.
And chases that by making faces at him? And even better, if you read Kelly's lips as he gets closer to the dugout, he appears to be saying, quote, hey, that bleep is easy. Bleeping easy. Then Carlos appears to say back, quote, throw your fastball, bitch. And Kelly appears to tell him to shut the bleep up. Man, this is good. Quick memo to Carlos. My dude, you're an unbelievable player. But why should he throw you a fastball when he can get you to chase his hook and make you look that bad doing it? And as expected, the bench is emptied. There was some jawing, and nothing else happened. So, in the aftermath, what do we have here? What are we left with? just a notoriously wild dude during a pandemic trying to shake off some rust and get it right mechanically? Or did Joe Kelly just officially start the Houston Astros Revenge Tour? Tough to say. I don't know exactly what is in my guy's head or heart as it relates to this situation, but Kelly insists he was not looking to start any revenge tour and he was not looking for any payback at all.
No, I mean, we beat him when I was with the Red Sox, we beat him in 18. It's one of those things that I pitch competitively, and you know, with the no fans here, it's easy to hear some stuff. You know, so I like picking off a couple times, it's fun. But yeah, something apparently they didn't take too kind to.
And again, I tend to buy that. And I tend to buy that because I watched that game. Did you? It's not like this guy was painting the black all game long and then suddenly is going at guys' heads. He was all over the place. He didn't have much in the way of location or command. And I'm guessing that if he wanted to hit Correa, it would not be with a breaking ball at his head that could get away from the catcher, which it did, and advance the runners, which it did. But here is the thing. COVID is a major, major story. It is the story. It's impacting everything. But the one thing that it's not impacting is the fact that there are still plenty of people around Major League Baseball that hate the Astros and are still pissed at the Astros and are still looking to extract their pound of flesh and looking to do it by dotting them. And the Astros are going to be on red alert. And while they're going to be red-assed all season long, there's always going to be that gray area because you don't really know if a pitcher is looking for payback or simply lost control of a pitch, especially in the case of Joe Kelly, who is always wild. And in this case, if the Astros are looking for Kelly to be punished, I would not hold my breath. I mean, sure, the powers that be are not going to be happy that the bench is cleared in an Astros game during a pandemic. They don't want pitchers throwing at Astros hitters, but how do we know that that's what they were doing? Furthermore, nobody actually got hit. So, what are you punishing Kelly for if you're saying he should be punished? For saying, nice swing, bitch?
Nice swing, bitch.
If anything, you should be rewarding him for saying, nice swing, bitch, nice not swing, punishing bitch. Him. In other words, Commissioner, good luck. Good luck, Robbie. Have fun with that. I'm sure you'll handle that perfectly like you've handled everything else in the past 12 months. This episode is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture turns your digital images into beautiful glass prints. That's right. They print your photos directly on glass, transforming your memories into handcrafted, frameless prints. Absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful thing to have. Fracture helps you focus on the moments that matter most by turning those favorite memories into beautiful glass prints. Fracture prints directly on durable glass with soft edges for safe handling. And every print comes with a 100% happiness guarantee. If for any reason you do not absolutely love that print, Fracture will make it right. Fracture prints look incredible. You really need to see them to believe it. Upload your photo at fractureme.com/Rome to print your photo today on glass. And we've got a special deal for you listeners. When you visit fractureme.com/Rome and you enter the promo code Rome, you'll get 20% off your order. That's fractureme.com/Rome. Enter the promo code Rome and save 20% off your Fracture glass print. I'm hyped on Fracture, and I do appreciate their sponsorship of this podcast. We are joined by Dave Roberts. David, it's so good to have you back. There's a lot to talk about, but before we get into the season, Dave, how are you doing? How is your family? And how is everybody around you during this most unusual time, Dave?
Thank you, Romy. First of all, it's great to be back with you and catch up and chat a little bit. My family is doing great. I mean, just like everybody, you know, adjusting to the shortened school, the quarantining, indecision and uncertainty of the fall classes. My wife's holding down the fort, like you know. But everything is going well, and it's good to be back to baseball.
Yeah, it's so great to have you back and to talk some baseball. One quick thought before we get into that. Like, you and I spoke, Dave, back in March, and we talked about life without baseball at that time. When you look back on the spring and the early summer, for instance, what was the entire experience like for you? How did you spend that time, and did you learn anything along the way?
You know what, Romy? I think that you know me, and I try to find positive takes on certain situations or in every situation. And I think for me, I got a little bit of a do-over with my son who was off to college and came back. And I couldn't imagine, you know, going and spending a fall in the dorms and a spring and then coming to live back at home. That would have been hard for me. And my son took it in stride and just got to listen to him and not try to teach him and look for that teachable moment like coaches always kind of do with their sons. And then my daughter, and just kind of reconnected. And it was a good thing for our family.
Dave, I know exactly what you're talking about because we sent our oldest son away to college also for his first year, and he came back. He left the dorms, and he came back and had to move back home. I know exactly what you're talking about. All right, so baseball is back. Last night was the first game against the Astros since the investigation and punishment for their sign stealing was announced. You've said in the past that the results of the investigation opened up an old wound for your players. So how would you describe the mood among the players before last night's game? Was it just another game, or did that one feel a bit different?
It felt different. It felt different. And you know, I try to preach and you know, talk about every game is of the same importance, and you've got to have that same psyche and mindset. And I really do believe that. But understanding who the opponent was, you know, what transpired in November, December, what kind of came out, and then following that, all the banter back and forth in the media from players, and then ultimately the penalty that was handed down, rightfully so. And then you come back to essentially the scene of the crime. And, you know, so when we got to the ballpark, it was different. It wasn't the jovial, the music blared. It was kind of a quiet, calm focus, and we took that into the game. And obviously you get to the game, and then the incident with Joe Kelly, and things kind of escalated a little bit more.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts is joining us back in the jungle. So in terms of Joe Kelly, I mean, he's had some control issues. He had a pitch get away from him against Bregman. Then there was the other one to Carlos Correa. Words were exchanged after he struck out Correa. The bench is emptied. So, Dave, as you were watching that whole thing play out, what were you thinking?
I was thinking, I hope it doesn't get out of control. And that's my job. That's my job. My job is to help us win baseball games and to make sure things don't get out of control, and especially under these circumstances with social distancing. And I certainly got to do better. I think Dusty's got to do his part as well and control both our clubs. But there was chirping on the other side, and one of those balls that got away, the one to Correa, was a breaking ball. So I don't think it was intentional, but Romy, you know, that's baseball too.
In fact, I'm going to move on, but let me just finally ask you that, since you brought that up like that. Houston did take offense, Dave, to the pitches, as you know. But from your standpoint, was there ill intent behind them? Was he or the team looking to send a message to the Astros last night?
I'm going to say no. And I think that Joe echoed that sentiment last night in his post game. So, you know, we've all seen the video of him warming up and breaking his own window in his house. So, I don't know. I'm going to stick to my story, Romy.
Dave Roberts is joining us. I have seen that video. My man couldn't hit a net. He couldn't hit a net, and he broke his own window. I don't know. I mentioned Dave before he came on. Maybe he was looking to send the house a message. Maybe the window showed him up.
That's fair.
All right, so Walker Buehler goes 3 2/3 last night, Dave, and then the bullpen takes over. You brought in 6 different pitchers who combined to give up just 1 hit and no runs against a powerful Astros lineup. How impressed were you with that bullpen last night, and what's it tell you about that group going forward?
So I was very impressed, really impressed. And I think that the bullpen in every bullpen seems like they kind of are under the most scrutiny on every club. But I really think that it's a position of strength for the Dodgers, and we need that going into the postseason and getting a ring this year. Walker, I shortened him up a little bit last night because it was his first time on the mound. You know, there was some stress in that last inning, and I want to make sure, you know, for us to win a championship, we need Walker healthy and built up the right way. So it was good to see the bullpen come up and pick us all up.
Dave Roberts joining us. Alex Wood went on the injured list yesterday. Clayton Kershaw threw 32 pitches in an extended bullpen session yesterday. Like, around the league, we've seen a number of starting pitchers go down already. So how are you going about managing your starting pitchers in a season like this?
It's crazy. And I think that, you know, we start with 30 guys on the roster, and we have a satellite group of guys that are built up that actually only one of those guys has major league service that potentially could slot in for somebody if somebody gets affected by the virus or somebody gets hurt, because you can't always have that bullpen day because it has that collateral effect going forward. I expect Clayton Penn yesterday was really good. He's going to throw another one on Thursday, and I expect him this weekend in Arizona. But again, it's just you're just preparing for stuff that we're just not used to, and just adding that depth, I think, is definitely beneficial for us, Romy.
Right, like every single day. Like you have no idea what to prepare for, or what to expect every single day. Like, for instance, when you deal with the COVID outbreak, Dave, that the Marlins had in their clubhouse, and now they're going to have their season paused for the rest of the week, you have Nationals manager Dave Martinez, who has dealt with a heart condition, saying that he was scared when he saw that. Are you scared personally? Are you worried?
Well, I'm a cancer survivor. I wouldn't say I'm worried yet, but obviously it the alarm bells go off when an outbreak with the Marlins certainly happens. And honestly, I think that things are going to happen where you can't control it. But it's just for me, when people become irresponsible and don't think of the ramification of what it can affect their teammates in the league. That's where I sort of have a problem with it. And so, again, I'm not trying to, right now I don't know enough information, but I just really encourage guys to be responsible. And I know our guys are doing it as such.
I was going to say that, Dave. What about your guys? Like, as an example, professional athletes typically feel like they're bulletproof. Nothing can touch them. Nothing can harm them. Do you get a sense that your guys are locked in that regard and that they're really aware of the threat that the virus does pose?
100%. 100%. And I think that, kind of going back to, what you talked about, early in the open, it's like this year there's been so much that has transpired. And I think that no one is immune to whether it be the pandemic, obviously the social injustice has been a topic of conversation. So there's been a lot of hard conversation affected in a lot of different ways in 2020, so I think that with this, our guys are certainly taking heed to all the protocols and understanding that, one team can mess it up for everybody. So we all got to do our part.
Right. One guy, which leads to a couple of guys in a whole clubhouse. Dave, before you go, one more topic. Back in March, when you and I spoke about the character of Mookie Betts and what he meant to the team and the club in the short time that you had him, then last week the team announces that major extension with him before he even played a single regular season game. Like, what does that say about Betts, and what's it say about you and the organization and what you see in him?
Well, I take it as a huge compliment that Mookie could commit to the Dodgers after such a brief honeymoon period, as far as spending, the spring training, the first spring training, then the summer camp, and then really commit to the Dodgers. We're not having a situation with fans and no one in the city. I think that's fantastic. I think it's fantastic for the city of Los Angeles. I think it's great for baseball to have Mookie in a Dodger uniform. It just, like I said before, it just really looks right. And also, Roman, lastly, I'll say is that, when you commit to a player, you have to bet on the guy. And the skill set is going to be what it is, and at some point it starts to diminish. But the guy to make people around him better, be a destination spot where people want to play with him, to continually, vie for a championship, and Mookie and encompasses all of that, and I couldn't be more happy for him.
I think that's great. One last thought. I mean, you had a great line a few weeks back when you said of Betts, quote, the Dodger uniform was meant for him. Can you lay that out? What do you mean by that, and then what does the Dodger uniform mean to you, Dave?
You know what, Romy? I see him with these high pants on, and honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is Jackie. And I had the pleasure on Rachel Robinson's birthday to wish her well, talk to her. And I just think that him breaking the color barrier, the Dodgers need a man of color in a Dodger uniform, and somebody that is strong in mind, that's tough, but is classy, intelligent, plays the game the right way, and Mookie, again, this is what he's about, and he knows the history of Jackie. So for him to wear that uniform and understand what it means to be a Dodger, it's just only fitting.
That is extremely high praise. He is the manager of the Dodgers. He's in his fifth year. He was a World Series champ as a player. The Dodgers are back at it against Houston tonight. Skip, Dave, I appreciate you very much. Great to have you back on the show. Thank you so much, and really good to hear your voice.
Roma, you're the best, man. We'll talk soon.
Former Olympian Bob Samuelson, great guy, great jungle guy, calls up and says, I'm listening, Rome. I'm on my way to play golf, and I've got a Charles Oakley story too. So we went off the air. Did anything become of that? Because I saw that somehow right in the middle of the whole thing is none other than Jeff in SoCal.
Yeah, so Jeff had tweeted you that he was also at Rancho Park Golf Course, which is a great historic golf course here in Los Angeles. Really hard to get on because it's one of the most publicly played golf courses. So kind of weird that they were both there at the same time on the middle of a weekday. And because they were there right around the same time and Jeff was listening to the show, he actually went and ran down Bob Samuelson, took a picture with him, and then sent it to us.
So, do you have a sense of how that went? Was Sammy up for that? Was he cool with that?
Not only was he cool with it, apparently Jeff invited him to play in some pre or post Smackoff golf tournament next year. As you know, some people went out and played after the Smackoff this year. Silk and Jay Stu and Rich Flores were there. So now Jeff has got Bob playing golf with the clones next summer after the Smackoff.
Wait, did Bob already consent to that? Did he say yes?
He did. Yes, he did.
You got an Olympian. An Olympian rolling with clones.
Yeah. And Bob,
do you have a sense of how good either or both of their sticks are?
I don't know anything about Jeff's game. I don't like the way Jeff dresses for the golf course, but Bob shot an 83 yesterday.
Are you trying to get me to follow up to get me to talk about your clothing line?
Nope, not at all. I didn't like Jeff's look yesterday.
Why?
The shirt wasn't tucked in and the hat was backwards. That's a disgrace. Yeah, there are people that wake up at 3 in the morning to go cut the grass and mow the greens, and you treat the golf course like that, Jeff. Tuck that shirt in and put that hat forward. But Bob shot an 83 at Rancho, which is quite difficult. So good for him.
Hey, Boomer, that is amazing. Did you just say tuck that shirt in and put that hat forward?
And get some pants on, too. Get some long pants on. Golf is a privilege. I mean, it is an expensive game that not everyone can play, and there are people that work really hard to maintain that amount of real estate out there, and you go and dress like you're at a house party for it. I show some respect.
Because it's a gentleman's game, and you have gear to sell.
It has nothing to do with that. I have not mentioned the name of the company, nor will I. It's simply about showing respect to a game that shows respect to its players. It is a highly manicured golf course, and you're out there looking anything but.
You know, Adam, I got to give you some credit because normally when I come to you, you're not prepared. You give me some bullcrap answer or you tell me what I want to hear and you go all Eddie Haskell with it. This is like the most impassioned I've heard you about anything in quite some time.
Yeah, I really don't like the way people dress out on the golf course. And this has nothing to do with what I do on the side. This just has to do with the fact that you really should show some more respect for the game that you're playing.
All right, let's be clear about one thing. Is this about the way a guy dressed, or is this a Jeff in SoCal thing? For instance, and I love the guy, but how did Bob Samuelson look on the course?
Samuelson looked good. He looked good. His hat was on forward. I'll give
him
that.
Why are you stumbling and stammering all over yourself when you say it?
I want to see those shirts tucked in, all right? I want to see some long pants out there. But Bob's hat was on forward, and I have nothing but respect for Bob. He represented our country in the Olympics. How can I go after an Olympian, especially one that's so nice to the show and so nice to me? And in fact, I look forward to one day playing golf with Bob. That would be great.
All right, so is it just a golf course thing? Can you flip your lid around backwards generally, or do you have to always wear it? And I'll tell you why I asked this question. I'm flashing back. When you went on that little diatribe of yours about, come on, man, tuck your shirt in, wear your hat the right way, wear it forward, I literally flash back to a moment that I had in the 818. I'm going to say mid to late 90s. And there was a guy, I don't know if you've heard of this guy or not, Hawk, knowing the way you know sports or don't. This guy's name is Pete Rose. He's the all-time hit king. Have you heard of him?
Ichiro's the all-time hit king, but I have heard of Pete Rose, absolutely.
Fair enough. All right. So Pete Rose, I was very good with. And in fact, you know, I haven't talked to Pete in a number of years, but I'm still good with Pete. Pete and I had a good relationship. I've got a few Pete stories. Pete once gave me a pair of cowboy boots that he had worn a number of times but wanted me to have them. And I know he was coming from a really good place. That's a different story. But one day, I'm on Ventura Boulevard, and I want to say I might have even been at Jerry's Deli. Guy Starkman. And I might have been there. I can't remember exactly where I was, but I was there for breakfast, and Pete's having breakfast. And it was one of those Saturday mornings where you kind of run out of the house. Maybe you don't shower, and you throw a lid on, right, because you got bedhead. I'm wearing it backwards. Pete had no problem with coming up to me and saying, yo, Romy, man, how about some respect? Wear that thing forward. And I thought to myself, damn, Pete, I mean, you're my guy and all, but are we going to talk about respecting the game? But, I mean, he had no problem. And it wasn't like a reason to go, and he wasn't totally disgusted. But he made sure, come on, man, show some respect. Wear that hat the right way. Is that what you're talking about?
I think there's a time and a place for everything. So if that's the way Pete wanted to have you look, then that's his disposition. Sure. My favorite human being on the earth was famous for wearing his hat backwards.
Ken Griffey Jr., right?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a time and a place for all of this. I just think that the golf course and maybe going to meet Pete Rose and his cowboy boots requires a forward hat. But, you know, I don't make the rules. I just follow them. And a golf course is a sanctuary, and you should show some respect for that place.
Yeah, but that's not typically a rule, though, right?
It should be.
It might be an unspoken rule, and you might want it to be a rule, but is it written down anywhere?
No, and that's part of my frustration with the game is you've got a bunch of idiots out there that look like crap playing golf, and they wear horrible clothes, and they look like crap, and they're playing a great game, and it's disrespectful.
I can't believe the way you spun me into an infomercial for your company. This is absolutely insane the way you did that. You know what, Hawk? You might be the smartest guy in the room. All right, so now that you've laid out everything that's wrong with it, why don't we give them an idea of what's right with it? In the ideal Adam Hawk world, what should they look like, and how do they find out, or where do they go to get that look? Go ahead, Adam. Say it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I promise you I wasn't angling for it. This was merely a jungle take about Bob and
Whatever.
Jeff.
Whatever. Take the pitch, dude, and run with it.
I think you should wear a collared shirt tucked in with any kind of belt that isn't white and put some foot joys on. Get rid
of
those
Nikes. Shut up, Adam. What's the website, and what's the name of the company?
NationGolfCo.com. NationGolfCo.com. We want to make the golfer look better. And that's it. Just it's a game that deserves that kind of respect, and that's what we're doing.
Two final thoughts. So you sent me a polo shirt. I rocked it. I did wear it. I didn't leave my house, but I did wear it. It's not bad.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate
that. And one more thing. Your partner, haven't met him yet, but man, my man looks like a young Andy Reid. He looks like Andy Reid Jr. How is homeboy? Is he getting after it?
I think he'll take that. Yeah, Ryan Engel, Andy Reid Jr. He is getting after it. Great guy. Surf legend down in San Clemente. And we really appreciate the fact that you rocked the polo, and we were happy to gift that to you. Sure. And anytime you want another polo, we've got eight of them. We're happy to bestow those upon you.
Let's not get crazy. You know what, though, dude? It looked good. It felt good.
Thank you.
I liked it. All right, so you give my best to Reid Jr. And way to go, Adam. One of your better efforts. I haven't said that very often, and I'm not sure if I'll ever say that again. Dudes, let's have a conversation. It's a conversation that you might be uncomfortable with, but you really need to hear. A conversation that you might be uncomfortable with that privately you do want to hear. I'm here to help. Listen, if you're like me and every other person working from home, you're probably staring at your gray hairs and all of your colleagues' gray hairs on video calls and have been for months now. If you're thinking about coloring your hair and you're freaking out, you're not alone. It's all right. Last week, I heard about Madison Reed Mister, and what caught my attention was the before and after shots of beards. Now, you know me. I rock the goatee. I have for decades. Madison Reed Mister is a gray blending natural color for your hair and your beard. I know some of you are freaking out because you see this and you think, man, that dude looks like he just dropped a bunch of shoe polish on his head. Looks like a dope. I get that. That's not what this is. There's none of that here. We're talking about a blend. It's subtle. Maybe you're not looking for a drastic change. Maybe you just want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Whatever look you're going for, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find your color match right there on the website. And they deliver it right to your door, and the process is quick and it's easy. You simply apply the color gel to dry hair, you apply the color activator, you wait 10 minutes, then you rinse and shampoo, and the natural looking hair color fades gradually. There is no commitment. Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. Use the code Rome. Get 10% off and free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mister. One more time. Use the code name Rome. You can only get that offer if you use the code name Rome. Do it. Believe me on this one. Andy McCullough. Andy, it's good to have you back. How are you, Andy?
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good. So take me back to Monday morning, if you don't mind. What was your reaction when you first heard the news of all the positive tests on the Marlins roster?
I mean, it's upsetting to think that, I guess reaction is an interesting way of putting it. I mean, like, my initial reaction was just the inevitability of it, right? Like, this was – bound to happen at some point. It just happened to occur during the first weekend of the season. I think it's, you know, it's really upsetting to think that at this point now, half of the team's roster has contracted a serious respiratory illness. You know, we don't know the extent of, you know, symptoms that these guys are suffering, but we know that it can be really, really problematic to have this thing, even if you're a young person who's not in the sort of, you know, high risk pool. So, I mean, but from a, like a baseball perspective, this was going to happen. And that's the inevitability of it, I think, was just really deflating for me, that there was all this talk about the money and, you know, pro rata, you know, pay and all this sort of stuff, when there never really was a plan put in place that would 100% protect against this. I'm not sure a plan to 100% protect against this is possible if you're going to be flying around the country. But this was going to happen with the way things are set up right now. If you're traveling, you know, through America right now, you are at risk of getting COVID. It's, you know, that's the nature of the beast right now.
Right. I mean, maybe not a foolproof plan, but a plan in and of itself would be pretty nice. As an example, you co-wrote a piece for The Athletic where one player who played in Sunday's Marlins-Phillies game said, quote, "probably shouldn't have played yesterday," end quote. So what do you make of that comment? And then as a follow-up, why did they play a game when the Marlins already had four known positive tests?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a couple things at play here, right? Like, I don't think players should be in charge of these decisions. I don't think it should be up, you know, there should be, like, public health officials who are being, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say that Major League Baseball is acting in concert with public health officials, so I don't want to, you know, say that everyone's doing this on their own. But what I will say is that the operations manual for the 2020 season does not have a sort of objective standard that says, okay, once you hit this number of infections, you cannot play today. It's all sort of subjective, and it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. And so the reason they played a game on Sunday was because it was on the schedule on Sunday, and no one stepped in from the Marlins, from the Phillies, from the commissioner's office, from a public health standpoint to say, you guys cannot play. So because, you know, there isn't a sort of break in place that says once you hit, you know, X number of positive tests, you can't play. It's just, you know, there's not an objective measure of it. And so you're going to have situations like this. Now, maybe in the future, if something like this happens, they won't play. But the reason they played is because it was on the schedule, you know, and that's just the nature of trying to conduct this sort of season in the midst of a pandemic. You're going to play games in settings that are, you know, in hindsight, going to look pretty bad.
Look, I agree with you. I mean, that first point about you don't leave it up to the players. I mean, I said the same thing myself, Andy. Of course you don't leave it up to the players. Players play. Players will always vote to play. You can't leave it up to them. And then to your other point about, well, the reason they played is because it was on the schedule. I mean, you're right. But what about this approach? I mean, is there a number of positive tests on one team that could shut down the season? Do we even know? How do they not have an objective standard?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think if you put in an objective standard, then, you know, you reduce the ability, I guess, to be creative or to be flexible or to try and work around it. I mean, look, they're playing this season because they want to make money. There's a lot of money at stake for the owners. There's a lot of money at stake at the players. They have a mutual benefit to try and get to the playoffs and get that extra playoff money there and get the season in the books, you know. So they want to try and play this season, stay as healthy as possible, and just get it over with, get the money, and try and come back next year when it's safer, right? So, yeah, I mean, is there a number of, you know, tests that say you can't play the season? No, there isn't. But as we've seen, just an outbreak with one team had a ripple effect that affected, you know, the Yankees, it affected the Phillies, it's affected the Orioles. The Nationals had a team meeting where they voted and said they didn't want to play in Miami this weekend. So if you have one or two more of these, if you have two outbreaks, you know, in teams like one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast in concert, you're talking about potentially, you know, like a quarter to a third of the league having to be shut down because of it. So there isn't a number in place, but it's not hard to see how things could have to shut down completely.
Andy McCullough is joining us. All right, so there's a team official who's quoted in your piece, this is a great quote, as saying, "I would rather take the money hit and we all just come back in 2021 with months of planning. This was duct taped together and nobody is following the fake rules anyway," end quote. It's a hell of a statement to me. What do you make of that sentiment?
I think there's a lot of weariness from folks in the league about the sort of, you know, I think just the amount. I mean, this is a logistical nightmare trying to put together this season. And I think it's the sort of thing that even if you gave the league, you know, several, like a full year to try and plan it under these circumstances, like playing in the midst of a pandemic, it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think there's some frustration from, you know, executives who weren't involved in the sort of negotiations between the commissioner, between the owners and the union, who were frustrated that all the dialogue was about the money and there was not enough dialogue about, you know, the frequency of testing, the, you know, eliminating lag in the testing, you know, what are the sort of protocols for, you know, staggering arrivals to come to the ballpark, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, like when you talk about the fake rules, like when you watch these games, guys are high-fiving, guys are spitting, guys are doing all the things that they were said they weren't allowed to do. Every game, every night features guys, you know, breaking these sort of rules. And they're just kind of like eyewash, you know. You can put in all these protocols and all these rules in place that, you know, ask guys to socially distance inside the clubhouse and ask them, you know, to spread out among like the dugout or spread out in the stands. But like the fact of the matter is they're traveling around the country in planes and in buses and I guess in Ubers and taxis when they're on the road. They're traveling around the country and staying in hotels as the country just spirals through the COVID crisis. I mean, it just keeps getting worse. It's not really the fault of the protocols or the fault of the athletes. You know, it's like you can argue about whether the players, you know, should they, you know, there's been a lot of unsubstantiated reports coming out about what led to the Marlins outbreak. But I think the bigger problem is that you are playing in a country where if you have one false step, you can catch this virus. And that is just a very, very difficult thing to try and pull off logistically when the margin for error is so slim. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Andy McCullough writes for The Athletic. He is a senior writer there. You know, I wonder, like, when the players heard about Red Sox pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez and the heart condition that he's currently dealing with, which is believed to be possibly connected to COVID, you know, I was talking to Dave Roberts about this. These guys think they're bulletproof. Mm-hmm. They're professional athletes, of course, right? What kind of an impact, though, when you see something like that happen to a young professional athlete, one of your own, what kind of an impact do you think that had around or on guys around the league? Any?
I mean, I think you can tell. Did guys opt out and say it was because of Eduardo Rodriguez? I mean, no. I think baseball as a sport asks its participants to have tunnel vision. It asks them to be blinkered. You know, you have to focus on yourself. There's all this talk about, you know, we just need to take care of our business and everything will be fine. You know, we control what we can control, and that's what they focus on. And I think it's very difficult to ask people who are wired to behave in that manner, incentivized to behave in that manner, rewarded with, you know, untold riches for behaving in that manner, and ask them to change the way they think based on this pandemic. So no, I mean, yeah, if you're just asking someone on the street, you know, like, hey, people in your job are getting this, you know, a guy who works in your job got this very serious virus. You know, are you worried about the long-term ramifications? If you catch it and go into your job, they'll probably say, oh, wow, yeah, I guess so. The baseball players, they're not, you know, they have to be single-minded, I think. It's how, you know, it's what separates them from everyone who tried to play in high school or college or whatever. And part of it is the mindset. So I don't think there's been a big effect. You know, I think people saw that with Eduardo Rodriguez, said, oh, that's a shame for him. And then, you know, went back to taking batting practice.
Right. All right. So really quickly, before you go, I mentioned that I had Dave Roberts on the program in hour number one. We talked about the incident with Joe Kelly. What did you make of that?
I mean, it was a nice distraction and a reminder of what is interesting about baseball. I thought Dusty Baker did a really good job sort of using the moral high ground he has as being someone who wasn't a member of the 2017 Astros to sort of defend his players and, you know, sort of move the subject past, hey, Joe Kelly's throwing after these guys, you know, for cheating in 2017, and move it towards, you know, we were defending ourselves because Joe Kelly used bad words against us. So I thought it was entertaining. I mean, I don't really support guys getting hit in the head with baseballs, but what did the sport expect? I mean, the Astros players weren't punished. Most of the rest of the industry was really, really upset. And, you know, this is a kind of understandable byproduct, I guess.
Exactly. Last thought. You recently spoke to the great Dr. Harry Edwards, who I've known for a number of years, regarding MLB players who knelt before games during the anthem. What did Dr. Edwards make of that?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Harry Edwards because I thought, you know, after the sort of weekend of guys doing protests and, you know, all those sort of different gestures, I kind of wanted to have like a historical perspective on it. I wanted someone, you know, I'm 33, so like I haven't seen as much as someone like Dr. Edwards, who's, you know, 77, and someone who's, you know, been around for a lot longer and can sort of contextualize this. And so I just kind of wanted to know like what his reaction was, and he had a lot of interesting thoughts. I mean, his main one, and there was, you know, there was sort of like a corporate synergy aspect to this that I found a little unseemly, but also like, it's hard to know, like, is it progress to see, you know, Black Lives Matter hung outside the Red Sox stadium, like hung outside Fenway, or is that, you know, like a brand trying to glom on to a movement, you know? And so I was curious, like, what his perspective was. And so what he said was basically like, you know, look, at this point, it's not enough to just say that Black Lives Matter. It's not enough to take a knee. It's about actually changing the issues that are affecting the Black community. You know, it's not enough to just recognize the suffering of folks in those communities, but it's important to actually do something to, you know, change the circumstances. And he was talking about how, you know, it's important to, you know, basically like just not settle for this, you know, to, you know, that the struggle continues and that athletes are going to be at the forefront of it, but it's not as simple as just taking a knee for one day. There's more to it than that. So I was appreciative of him for taking the time, because I did want some sort of historical perspective on what was a pretty memorable weekend with regard to all the gestures and stuff.
Yeah, right. So before I let you go, let me follow that up then. If African-Americans make up 8% of the player pool in Major League Baseball, how would you describe how the league, individual teams, and the players have engaged with the cause for social justice? What's your take?
I think there is reason to believe that there's progress. I think there is a benefit to having prominent players like Clayton Kershaw and Joey Votto talk about, you know, that Black Lives Matter, you know, to say that they are in the struggle for their teammates, you know, that even if they can't, you know, understand their experiences, they're more willing to listen. I mean, you saw guys like Amir Garrett and Matt Kemp speak out after, you know, Kershaw spoke to The Athletic about, like, you know, how he has become more aware of these issues. And those guys, you know, like Garrett and Kemp, were talking about what it meant to them to hear Kershaw say that. And I do think that has value, but it's not as simple. Again, like, these are just rhetorical things. It's you know, it's nice to hear that. It does feel good in a way, but there has to be more behind it. There has to be work done to increase, you know, Black participation in Major League Baseball, to increase representation among Black people in front offices, you know, in the dugout, in, you know, managerial roles, all those sorts of things. So the rhetoric is nice, but it has to be backed up with action.
He is a senior writer for The Athletic. He previously covered baseball at the LA Times, the Kansas City Star, and the Star Ledger. Andy McCullough, my guest. Great job, Andy. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Thank you very much. Let's do it again.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hello, Professor. How are you, Lori?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I love that Harvard of the West reference.
Well, thank you very much. It's accurate, right?
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Jim, I'm a longtime listener. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I really admire what you've been doing this year in terms of the pandemic and the issues raised by Black Lives Matter and the coverage that you've been giving to all of that. Sports definitely takes a second place, you know, to those issues.
You know, Lori, I appreciate you saying that. How should I refer to you? Are you Lori? Are you doctor?
I am. I'm a lawyer and a professor at UC Santa Barbara.
Can I, before you tell me what you're going to tell me, and I'm really anxious to hear that, can I say to you that when I got my start in Santa Barbara in the late 80s, and I was just getting started, there was a famous, famous professor on campus named Walter Capps. Do you remember him, or do you know of him?
Absolutely. I know him. I know his family well.
Okay, so he said to me, I worked at a news talk station in Santa Barbara, KTMS, and he was in one day, and I have no idea how he even knew who I was, but he said to me, I want you to know, young man, you shape opinion. You have a significant responsibility in this community with that microphone. You know that, right? I said, I'm not sure, Professor, but that made such an impression upon me, and I think that's a story that I've always kept near to my heart, and I thought that you might appreciate that because I thought you might know him.
Oh, my God, I totally have goosebumps hearing that. That is so Walter to say that to you. And I will tell his wife, Lois, who I speak with pretty regularly, that you remembered that and that it had that kind of impact on you. That's extraordinary.
Oh, no, I'm so thrilled. I'm so thrilled that you still have a relationship with her and you could share that with her. And the other thing I remember, you know, I took his Vietnam class. And at that time, that was the only Vietnam class in the entire country.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying how important it was to welcome the vets home, to make sure you welcome all the vets home. So that stayed with me, too. I'm anxious to hear what brings you to the program today.
Well, you know, I've thought about calling before. I'm such a long-time listener. My kids grew up listening to the Smack-Offs, right? But I always think you cover everything, and you don't need any help with your takes and or any amplification. But, you know, the caller that was on this whole MLB thing is driving me nuts from an ethical and a legal standpoint. And the caller who was on in the first part of the show, who said there is no objective standard that baseball should be guided by, is simply not correct in that aspect of what he said. And that's what I want to talk to you about. If you run it down, this thing has been mishandled from the minute that Juan Soto tested positive. I mean, look at Lou Williams. He's in quarantine for 10 days because he was outside of the bubble doing whatever. And once the Nationals had a positive player, in my opinion, those guys should have been quarantined, because what they did was then play the Yankees and expose the Yankees. And you've got four Marlins who tested positive on Sunday. The idea of asking the players is insane because, as you said, players play. Players are paid to play. Players want to get their stats. It's a total conflict of interest to ask the players to make that decision. And what Rob Manfred is doing by not stopping play when there were, yesterday was it 13 or 14 Marlins that were reported to be positive, what he's doing is engaging in what in either civil law or criminal law would be called reckless endangerment. And, you know, MLB has a fleet of people working for them. They've got house counsel. I don't know why their house counsel isn't jumping up and down screaming about reckless endangerment at this point. If they don't know what that is, they can ask Alexa. You could ask Alexa, what is reckless endangerment? And she'll tell you.
Right.
It is. Seriously,
I really appreciate what you're saying. Let me ask you this. I think that the person that you're talking about is Andy McCullough. He's a senior baseball writer for The Athletic.
Correct.
I may be wrong. I think that you're saying the same thing. I think that's what he was saying. When he said that there's no objective standard, I think he was saying what you're saying. Why was there not an objective standard in place? I mean, maybe they want to have some flexibility. Maybe they want to be fluid. Maybe they want to make money. What do you know? Maybe they want to make some money. But at the same time, I think that what we're saying is that there was no objective standard in the sense that if one guy tests positive, then you shut down this team. Or if it's four guys, man, they're just going with it. Like, what exactly is the plan?
Yeah, no, that's right. But when you get to 13 or 14,
right,
or whatever it's going to be, it's reckless endangerment, because reckless endangerment is when somebody engages in conduct that creates a risk of serious physical injury to another person while disregarding the foreseeable consequences. And so there is a standard, and Manfred should be enforcing that standard. Because really, who is acting on behalf of the, not just the players, but the hotel staffs and the taxis and the bus drivers and everybody else they come into contact with?
Let me ask you this. In terms of who's acting on behalf of the players, you know, the Players Association, certainly, arguably, do they bear any responsibility? Like, they don't have to play. They certainly can opt out. They know what they're doing. How much responsibility do the players bear?
Well, that's a really good question, because that whole negotiation, that led to the 60-game season, didn't really get into that. It was all about, as Andy McCullough said, it was really all about the money. And at this point, if they put all of these four teams into quarantine, they don't have an MLB season, and then they've lost all the money that everybody negotiated for.
Mm.
I mean, it's incredibly ill-advised to go ahead without having a number that could serve as their standard. And then, you know, you've got MLB, you've got Manfred with a tremendous conflict of interest, because he can't be objective in making this decision, because he has too much involved personally, and he's going to get too much heat from the owners.
Right, who he works for. Let me ask you really quickly, Lori. So what's, I'm curious, since I have a son who started at the University of Wisconsin-Madison this past year, what's going on campus? Are the kids coming back to school? Are classes going to be online? Has this been decided? What is the UC system doing?
I'd rather speak to UC Santa Barbara.
Okay. Sure.
Than the whole UC system, because I'm not sure that the whole UC system is on the same program at this point. But most definitely, UCSB is only having remote learning this fall quarter and probably this winter quarter.
Mm.
Now, that, you know, you know the kind of impact that's going to have. Freebirds is still open because there are, you know, a lot of kids that still live in Isla Vista, and a lot of people who live in the Santa Barbara area who love that place, myself included, and go there. But there will not be classes, and there will not be fall sports at UCSB.
Right. I wonder how that's going to impact. Yeah. How's that going to impact Sam's to go? And is Sam's to go still around? And is Meredad still around? Lori, you did not go there as an undergraduate, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
But you ended up there, and that's what matters.
I ended up there, yeah. I went to UCLA, and then I went to Bolt, the law school at UC Berkeley.
Oh, come on now. I don't want to age you, but my attorney and best man went to Bolt Law School.
All right.
And he is all the right. smartest guy I know, David Feldman.
Well,
Lori,
okay,
we're getting carried away. You know how, like, there's this notion that if I'm a talk show host and I'm talking to an audience of millions, I'm really only talking to one person. The problem is I'm only really talking to one person. Like, you and I just picked up this conversation like it's a phone conversation. So I think responsibly I need to return you to your life of ethics and being a professor at UCSB. But I can't tell you how happy I am to meet you, to talk to you. And please share that, what I said with you or to you about the Caps family. That'd mean a lot to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I will. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for taking the call.
He is Wesley Woodyard. Wesley, it is so good to have you back. Let me first ask, you and I caught up back in April, but the way life is these days, it already feels, Wesley, like that was 3 years ago. How are you doing right now? How is everybody around you?
What's up, Jim? What's up, Jungle? Man, we're doing great, man. Me and the fam, man, we're in good spirits, man. We're out on the water. My wife's kicking my butt every day in golf, so I'm enjoying myself, man. We're doing good. How about you guys?
Oh, same. That's so good to hear you say that. You know, that whole water thing, you and I have talked about that in the past. Wesley, I have to say, I spent a couple of weeks back on the lake. I now fully understand the lake life. I know now what you've been talking about regarding the lake life. For a minute, explain, why is the water so important and why does it make you feel different? Explain lake life for those who don't know.
Man, for me, lake life, man, I wake up every morning with a choice and a decision to either attack the day or not attack the day. But when I get out there and I walk past to my kid's room and I see that lake water flowing in the back, it just refreshes my mind, makes me just realize and appreciate everything that's going on in this world, especially with COVID, man. You know, some things you just got to cut out of your life, some things that you can't indulge in anymore, and some things you can't do. But, man, lake life, man, refreshes you. You get out there on that water, you enjoy it, you have fun, you see your kids floating and swimming around, and it makes you appreciate things, man, because that water is just a symbol of ever-flowing, you know, love, man, and to me, that's what I love about the lake life.
Wesley Woodyard joining us. I want to ask you one thing about what you just said. I love that notion of you get up in the morning and you have a decision to make every single morning. Am I going to attack the day or am I not going to do so? Are there days when you don't? Like, I'm sure there are days where maybe you don't want to. Yeah. So what do you, I mean, are there off days? Do you take days off or do you attack every day and are there no off days?
Man, I consider it like a team, you know. It's going to be some days you go into the gym where you're not going to be the best you. You're not going to be, you know, always amped up. You're not going to have all the energy that you need. But if you pour it into the people around you, they're going to not necessarily carry the weight, but they're going to make sure that you are going to step your game up. You're going to, you know, you're going to arise to the challenges of the day. So, man, I have a great wife. My kids, man, they're like little miniature me, so I can't never really have an off day. I'm a father of four, so every day is a new challenge for me, man, and it's exciting that I have I guess I can call my family my teammates, too, because they challenge me every day, and kids, man, they don't care if you're having a bad day or a great day. They just want their dad to be around and enjoy them, and that's what I love so much about being a father.
That is extremely well said, and that is so true. Wesley Woodyard is my guest. All right, so over the past few days, we've seen a number of NFL players announce that they're going to opt out for the season. As an NFLPA vice president, what kind of thoughts have you had as you've seen this play out?
It's been interesting, man. From the beginning of the negotiation talks with the owners and just talking to some of the players, you can kind of feel like on the player side that guys almost, I can't speak for everybody, but most guys really just wish that, you know, this would have been one of those years that, hey, fellas, it would have been cool if the owners would have stepped up and like, hey, fellas, we're not going to have a season. We're going to come in here. We're going to try to let COVID pass through. There's no way that as a man you can go out there and play football and not expect to, you know, contract COVID. It's a physical, it's a contact, it's an up-in-your-face game. You know, it's different between basketball, baseball, soccer, all of those other sports where you can practice and hone your skills one-on-one sessions away from everybody else. But football, it's hard to do that. You got to be physical with a guy. You got to be in the trenches. You got to work hard in front of another guy to really, you know, hone those game day skills that you need. But man, overall, I'm excited that our PA, we got some great negotiations done with the owners, and we were able to make the safety, player safety, the number one priority for our guys that, you know, want to play the game, man. And I'm not surprised to see guys opting out. We were expecting that, and that's why we wanted to fight so hard to give guys that opportunity to be able to opt out. And it's cool to see guys, you know, expressing their rights to want to opt out. Guys are saying they want to be healthy for their family. Guys are just saying they worry for their safety. So that was the main thing in negotiations. And, you know, of course, everybody wanted to get their whole paragraph 5 guaranteed. That's not going to happen because there's so many intangibles and things within the salary cap that most people don't understand. You know, if we get our full paragraph 5 and the season is canceled halfway through the season, that's going to affect the guys coming up in the future CBAs. And that's something that we don't want to affect. We don't want the guys that are in college to be affected by things that are going on this year and vice versa. So
Wesley Woodyard is my guest. You know, it's a really interesting answer. There's a lot to unpack there. Obviously, you're going to fight on behalf of the guys that you represent right now and the guys who are coming up afterwards. On a personal level, have you considered opting out of the season or announcing that you might take the year off and come back next year? Like, how did you and your family approach it?
Yeah, Jim, you know, a lot of thoughts have hit me, man. It's been a crazy off season. You know, usually I'm expected to be reporting to a training camp right now, and I've considered, you know, taking a year off and letting my body heal up coming back and after the next season. But, you know, man, I'm also a guy that loves the game of football, and I feel that if the right protocols are in place, teams are following, you know, those protocols, and as a PA, we're making sure that they follow those protocols, then, you know, I'll give it a shot. And if the opportunity is right for me, I think playing 12 years in the NFL, I really have the opportunity to now say, hey, if it's not the right deal for me, the right team, then I'm not going. I'll rather consider coming back in the future, you know, and letting my body heal up even more, you know, chiseling away those little bad things in my game and just working on me. But, man, it's tough. And I commend guys that showed up yesterday and the rookies and quarterbacks that showed up before. Man, it takes a lot of guts in this trying time right now, I tell you that, to play this game of football.
Wesley Woodyard, my guest. You know, I wonder, you mentioned 12 years, and that's a massive number, and it's so impressive when you consider that you were undrafted out of Kentucky. Only the absolute best can last that long in the NFL. So given the punishment, given the risks, what keeps you coming back for more at this point?
Man, it's... When you were a little kid, you dream about playing in the NFL. And through our high school and little league, like, that's pure love for the game. When you go to college, you still have that love for the game, but you understand, like, hey, there's another business entity that goes on with football. And once you jump into the NFL, immediately you're blindsided by, hey, this is a business. So if you don't have that love that you've built throughout before you got to the NFL, it's going to be hard to last and thrive while you're in the NFL, man. So to me, I just want to go out there and I want to use my platform of playing football to inspire other people to be better, my teammates to be better, And like I said before, I love this game of football. And every day I wake up, man, I'm so proud and so blessed that God chose me to be a football player, to, you know, be an athlete, to carry this torch of being a positive change within our community and within our world. So, man, I love the game. And it's hard to say, even though I just turned 34, it's hard to say that, man, one of these days I'm going to have to hang it up, because it's something that I've been doing for the majority of my life, and I look forward to playing football every day.
Wesley Woodyard is my guest. You know, one of the things I always appreciate about a conversation that you and I have is we don't only talk football. Before I let you go, I'm curious, what kind of thoughts have you had over the past few months following the murder of George Floyd and the demands for social justice which followed?
Man, the athletic world, oftentimes, man, everybody just wants us to entertain them. Nobody really wants us to stick up for what we believe in. You know, people feel we don't have that right. Just because you're an athlete, you should go sit in the closet and shut up. It's not cool at all, man. But the most shocking thing to me is that the lack of support from fellow teammates, from guys who are still unsure the reason why people are protesting. You know, that's the oppression of colored people, police brutality. And it's one thing for me to say that I walk outside of the house and I have to carry myself differently, because I know if I'm in a certain situation with a officer, my life is at risk. My child's life is at risk. And I know if I was on the other end of that spectrum and my teammates came to me and told me, said, I'm afraid for my life in these situations, I would do everything in my heart and my power to try and stop that. And that's the beautiful thing about sports, man. The platform that we have, we can change our communities. And when an event or when something like this arises, you can either fold or you can continue to build those monuments that are going to change and make that change that we need inside our community. So, man, I'm proud to say that I'm going to step up for anything that's wrong, and I'm going to continue to fight that beast of oppression, that scary cycle that's going on in this world, and I'm going to make sure that guys aren't afraid to, you know, express themselves, because I don't want to ramble, but I remember when Kaepernick first took a knee, we felt like as players that our coaches and our owners wanted us to shut up and hush and just let things go because it was going to eventually hurt their pockets. And that's the main thing. If it's going to hurt your money financially, then as long as we get our point across and that you guys hear us and show us the support, that's what we're asking for. It's not like we're going out there doing anything crazy. Like, we're asking to be heard and to be supported for our lives. And that's just humanity. At the end of the day, that's just being a human.
Wesley, I agree with you. I agree with everything you just said. He's entering his 13th NFL season. He is a good friend of the program. He is the co-founder of the 16 Ways Foundation, and he played his ball at Kentucky, college ball, that is. My man, enjoy the rest of the day. Get some good lake life. Enjoy the fam. And, you know, I appreciate you very much, Wesley. Good to get caught up.
Hey, Jim, man, you continue being a great man. Love you and respect, bro. Talk to you soon.
Good night now.